Authorities don't yet say what group may have tried to carry this out, but perhaps we can infer something from how complicated it would be to attempt. We're joined by Professor Paul Piller, who teaches at Georgetown University in Washington in the Security Studies Program. He was with the CIA for more than 20 years. Professor Piller, welcome.
Nice to be with you, Alex.
Let's go through this plot as described by authorities. Attacks on as many as 10 planes, liquid bombs smuggled on board by terrorist passengers, perhaps different components carried by different passengers. From what we've heard so far, the bombs all on planes from London to the U.S., all to explode within a short time of each other. It actually sounds fairly complicated to me.
First of all, go back a little bit in history, because this particular methodology has a clear precedent. It was the almost the exact same method that was attempted by Ramzi Youssef, the leader of the World Trade Center bombing in 1993, who, after he fled after that incident, had this plot to blow up about a dozen U.S. airliners over the Pacific in the Far East. This was in 1994 and 95. That plot got foiled when, as they were mixing their materials or assembling them in an apartment in Manila, they accidentally set off a fire and the fire department discovered them.
If you were running this, just in practical operational terms, what would you have to consider? What kinds of things do you have to think about?
The security countermeasures. And we know from going back to the Youssef experience and the interrogations of him after the earlier plot, he was highly conscious of this, thinking about what sorts of materials could be sneaked past security. And, of course, back in those days, the aviation security checkpoints were much less rigorous than what we have today. That's the first thing you have to consider, and then you have to consider on-flight security measures, sky marshals, and that sort of thing.
Wouldn't you have to teach the people who were going to carry this out how to do it? That is, how to get these bomb components safely on board and then put them together in such a way that they'd actually go off?
On the sheer mechanics of putting an explosive together, and I'm not an engineer or a technical expert, but my understanding of the sorts of materials that could be used, they are not that hard to put together, to combine in a way that would cause at least a small explosion or a large fire. And we should remember that any kind of thing going bang at 30,000 feet in a thin-skinned aircraft can be much more destructive to the point of being catastrophic than it would be on the ground, where it might make a relatively small amount of damage.
How about communication, maintaining discipline and information, that kind of thing? Would cell phones be safe, or would they have to have something better than that?
They generally are highly conscious of operational security, well aware of the well-publicized communications intercept capabilities of the authorities in the United States, Britain, and elsewhere, keeping most of their communications, or to the largest extent possible, face-to-face. And another technique that they have used in the past, particularly overseas, is with the use of prepaid chips or cards that don't associate a particular cell phone number with any one address or any one individual. So they use all these techniques to try to minimize their vulnerability.
How about fake IDs? Wouldn't it be risky for potential bombers to use their real names when boarding planes? Because you wouldn't know if you might be on a watch list. So you'd have to get fake IDs for 20 people.
We've had unfortunate incidents where, say, a supply of blank passports had been stolen from the embassy of a particular country somewhere, and then they enter the black market. But there again, fake identification is not absolutely essential, as we saw to our horror in the investigation of 9/11. We had some of those perpetrators operating under their real name. I would not see that as an insuperable barrier to even a modestly organized organization, but it's certainly one of the major things that they would have to plan for and prepare for.
But, you know, isn't there a kind of difference in scale if you're talking about someone who organizes to buy subway tickets and someone who organizes to buy transatlantic airplane tickets and maybe for multiple trips? There's talk about test runs, that sort of thing. People who are going to maybe acquire fake IDs, bomb components. I mean, it just seems much more grand, if you will.
Remember after 9/11 how many times you heard, oh, there must have been a state security service behind this. Well, there wasn't. Yes, you need a little more money, of course, to buy airplane tickets than to buy train or transit or bus tickets. But as far as coordinating schedules and things like that, not only are we all quite experienced with using cell phones, but you or I could get online and research the airline schedules and probably in pretty short order come up with our own list of simultaneous flights that would make tempting terrorist targets for an operation like this.
Paul Piller teaches at Georgetown University in Washington in the Security Studies Program. He was with the CIA for many years. Professor Piller, thank you.